This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast. For this week, we are looking at upcoming releases, Wolverine and the To-Do List.
The Wolverine.
God, make up your mind.
The Wolverine.
Spoiler-free reviews of Pacific Rim and Grown Ups 2 are from the... Who cares if we get that title right? The From the Outside In topic this week, are actors getting overpaid? And are people getting sick of big-budget tentpole flicks? Latest movie and TV news, as always, including our own brand of trivia. My name is Aaron Peterson. With me today are my fellow host, Scott Clark.
Hey, what's going on, Aaron?
Just recording. Brian Williams.
Hey, what's up, Aaron?
And Justin McCumber.
How are you doing today, Aaron?
I'm great. We had our 100th episode. We got a lot of feedback, so I want to make sure to thank everybody for that before we go too far. Thanks.
I think we went too far long time ago.
I was really shocked with the numbers looking at that because it was so long. I thought, well, we'll have 8 downloads of that episode.
Yeah.
Because I think it cracked 3 hours.
Somebody said they read it in shifts, I think.
Yeah, they had to break it into parts.
Read it or maybe listen to it.
Or listen to it.
Listen to it.
Yeah. Read it. We have it transcribed somewhere online, don't we?
We have it transcribed.
Transcribed in Braille.
It's in Danish.
Danish?
Danish, I don't know. That's the first language that popped in my mind. I can't say Spanish because I can't even say Chipotle.
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 Doing a podcast with Nell.
Day in the weird. Sam Mendes signed for the next Bond flick. Who's excited?
Who's not?
I am. Yeah. Skyfall was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Do you guys... Yeah. I think this is the first director that's actually returned for a second round.
Ever?
I think so, in the Bond franchise.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
No, didn't... Oh, God, who was that directed GoldenEye?
Yeah, that's true. Martin Brest. Martin Campbell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he came back and did another one.
Yeah, he did, but it was with a different Bond. I don't think it counts.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I'll swear by all your criteria for what counted.
Exactly. I'm establishing this. That's how it's going to play out.
Okay. Your knowledge of that type of information is way too deep, even for a movie podcast.
Exactly. You just don't get it.
You're right.
Stallone also confirmed that Crazy Mel Gibson is going to be in Expendables 3. Congratulations, he's got a job. Good job, Robert Downey Jr. Getting him some work. He's going to be in Machete Kills, and Expendables 3. Mel Gibson's making a really delayed comeback.
Do you think of Mel Gibson as like a big... Was he a huge action star?
Mel Gibson was probably one of the biggest stars in the world.
Jesus Christ. Between the Lethal Weapon movies, Braveheart, The Patriot.
Braveheart.
Mad Max.
God, yeah.
Huge action star, man.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, reach over and slap Scotty. No, just like question.
Most of the movies I saw him in, it was more character stuff. Even like
Martin
Ransom.
Fucking Riggs. That's all I got to say. Crazy. You know, he's suicidal in one movie. Apparently he forgets about it in the next movie. Yeah.
Pops his own shoulder back
in
place.
Yeah, he just like randomly has this shoulder problem that conveniently factors into the entire ending of the film. Fantastic. And last little tidbit, then we'll move on to real news. Paranormal Activity 5 has been moved out of October to January 4th, 2014, and no one has any idea why.
That doesn't make any sense.
No.
That is dumb. No. Well, we've had 4 years going of having the Paranormal Activity movies being a tradition in October, and that was, you know, something I was really looking forward to. Yeah. Knowing that we have to wait till January is kind of a pisser.
Well, and I get trying to not make it seem like it's annualized, but that just doesn't...
It is.
Yeah.
Accept it.
I mean, I can't imagine that the movie is not looking well. If anything, just wait until next year and bring it back for Halloween. I see no benefit to moving that to January.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, they're the ones in charge, so I'm sure they got a reason. Johnny Depp. Now we'll go to real movie news. Mr. Johnny Depp. I don't know what the hell's going on with this guy, but he signed on to star in a Alice in Wonderland sequel. Now, granted, the movie made $1 billion worldwide, well aware of this, but he always seemed to me to be that actor that was more about the craft than the dollar. And this move to me says it's more about the dollar.
I don't get that at all. I mean, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Willy Wonka, Dark Shadows, those all just seem like money grab movies.
I mean, all of them?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, no, I think each one of them he was basically Hollywood loved his character acting, and they finally said, okay, Johnny, you can go do whatever you want to do, and they just turned him loose, and now they just keep paying him to keep doing his shtick.
But I think my point is, I think that's been going on for quite a while. It's not like a brand new thing with Alice in Wonderland 2 coming out.
Maybe to me, I guess this burns it into my head that he's going for the bucks.
Well, and don't get me wrong, I like Johnny Depp. I think he's seriously due for a normal dramatic role or a serious role.
Well, didn't he have that, though, in The Tourist, and that movie tanked?
But that was a crappy movie.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bad movie.
It had nothing to do with his...
He was in it.
Yeah. Public Enemies?
Yeah, that I did, actually like Public Enemies.
That did well.
But
it did okay.
It didn't do great.
He hasn't had a mega hit since, I think, Alice in Wonderland, actually. And the Pirates movie. I don't know which one was last, but...
And they're making another one of those, too.
Oh, yeah, that's 2015 Pirates 5.
I just think it's a little too quick to call him wanting to do another one of these films as a cash grab. I think mostly what it has to do is with his friendship and affection for Tim Burton.
No, Tim Burton's not directing it.
Well, but how much involvement is he going to have in it? And did Tim Burton ask him to be in it?
I don't know. I mean, that would be all speculation. But yeah. I don't think if Burton's behind it, I don't think he would ask him to do it.
Why not? I mean, Dark Shadows, Tim Burton, Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton, Sweeney Todd, Edward Scissorhands, go back and Ed Wood.
Right.
All these films.
Those were all directed by Tim Burton. Tim Burton's not directing this one. So
no,
why would
but
he
is still probably involved in some capacity. And if there's going to be another one, why not have the same guy come back and play the same role?
I guess maybe he really enjoyed being the Mad Hatter.
Who knows sucked. How good or how bad of a... time he had doing it. I wouldn't be so quick to say it's purely a money grab on his part.
That's kind of I like.
It seems like he's trying to create a monopoly on all these almost literary and early cinema and TV characters. Between the Lone Ranger, you got Dark Shadows, 21 Jump Street. He's got a movie called Into the Woods coming up, where it involves he plays the big bad wolf. Mm-hmm. Where it's got a lot of other characters like Little Red Riding Hood, Cinderella, Jack and the Beanstalk, stuff like that coming out. I think it's next year.
Well, to be fair, he was in the original 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, but okay.
Good call.
But the point is, I mean, it's like there's all these former characters. I say former, but just characters from the past. Like he's just trying to hoard up, I don't know, he's all these different characters. I don't know why can't he branch out to something else? Now it's almost like there's been this little time where okay, it's neat to kind of reinvent these Alice in Wonderland, these classic books and that kind of stuff. Now it's almost becoming passé and do another movie like Blow.
Yeah.
That's what he needs to do. I guess my number one question is his acting turning to shtick? And I'm one of the few defenders of Lone Ranger. I thought Lone Ranger was good and he was good in it. I actually liked him in Dark Shadows even though the movie wasn't that good. I just think his acting is starting to become shtick, where when I see him, instead of saying, wow, what a really interesting take he's got on that character, I'm looking at it going, really? Again? Because it's starting to become the same thing.
Yeah, everything's Jack Sparrow's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's Jack Sparrow.
Clownish and, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everything's big costumes, you know, big hair and big makeup, and you do have to wonder if he worries that he can't carry off a role anymore if it's just him without all this affectation on him.
Maybe he's an extremely insecure guy, and this way he gets to cover up his, you know, his personal concerns. I have no idea. I just know it's getting kind of silly.
It's getting boring.
Yeah, it's getting boring. There you go. Let's go to something more fun. Looks like comic book movies might be getting another adult-themed option with X-Force, and they better have freaking Deadpool in it.
I gotta say, I'm not really excited about this one. Back in the day when I was a big X-Men reader, X-Force was one of the titles that had come out around 1991, and I didn't like it, mostly because Rob Liefeld was the artist. He may have also been the writer, but no, he was the artist on it, and I just really felt like his art style was just inappropriate for the characters, and it kind of turned me off, and a lot of his character designs were just not good, but it was an X-Men associated title, so I did keep reading it, but I never was a big fan. So the fact that they're making a movie out of this doesn't necessarily thrill me, but if they're going to change some of the character design and of course the special effects and all that are going to be good, so I'm sure I'll see it, but that was never a favorite title of mine, so I'm not all that excited, but now is Fox putting this one out as well?
I believe so.
I wonder if they're going to tie it in with the X-Men, or if this next Days of Future Past film will have something in it that might lead into this X-Force movie.
Maybe. I mean, there's a lot of things that they could do. I just want an adult-themed, and I want Deadpool in it. That's really all I care about.
You just want to see Deadpool in the movie?
Yeah, then you probably need to look elsewhere. Who knows?
Deadpool is definitely part of X-Force. He was definitely.
Was he?
Yes, he was.
Okay, then he must have come in after I left.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, it was. He was like in one of the. They reinvented the group about three or four different
times.
And towards one of the last revisions of the group, he was. Wolverine led the group. He was part of it.
Okay, this is way after I left.
But I'm when I think of X-Force, and I'm biased maybe, but I believe I think
no, you're just
people
old.
Generally, when people generally think of the group X-Force. I think of the same group, or at least something close to it, as the one that Justin's thinking of.
Ron Howard is back directing, and Tom Hanks returns as symbologist. Apparently, I put symbolist earlier in this format, so I wasn't sure what he did. I didn't know if he played for them. I didn't know what he did.
Yeah, he worked for John Williams in the orchestra.
But symbologist Robert Langdon in Inferno, which is the newest book based on his, I guess you could say, adventures. They're not very adventurous, but it's planned for December 2015 opening. I had no idea they were making more of these things.
I didn't either.
Well, when Da Vinci Code makes $758 million, Angels and Demons makes $486 million, they're going to that well one more time.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
There was a third book they were supposed to do, but it just basically fell through, and I guess they thought the fourth one, Inferno, was just a better possible translation into film. So
is there four books total? Is that
The Inferno is the fourth one. They basically just skipped over the third one, and said whatever. So we're just gonna this will be better. So and when you get Ron Howard and Tom Hanks to sign on to it, then you got to go with it.
Well, I think the third book had more to do with American history, and they probably figured, Nick Cage and the National Treasure films adequately covered American history and, solving puzzles.
Yeah, whatever happened to those movies? I mean, they were both huge hits. I thought they for sure would have came up with a third one of those.
I don't know. He's too busy doing Ghost Rider movies.
He's doing movies that made like $8, and they're on Netflix when they first come out. He can't throw together a National Treasure, whatever it is, 3?
It's funny you actually bring up National Treasure, because I was thinking about that when we were talking about another like Da Vinci Code movie. I kind of like the movie. I actually kind of like the National Treasure movies. I thought they were mm-hmm. interesting. But when you compare the two together, National Treasure movies are a little bit more silly, I think. They're almost like not realistic kind of thing. And this one is almost so serious. I kind of hope that the third movie kind of does a little bit halfway between that.
Has a little bit more fun.
A little bit more fun. Because I love the whole concept of like looking at stuff in history and finding clues and the searching for this kind of thing. But it just the second one in particular just didn't really work for me. So I kind of hope they find a happy
movie. I didn't like either one of them. I thought they were both just awful. Awful. Well, they were boring. They weren't awful. They were boring.
Yeah, they're just okay.
Yeah, they couldn't get behind either one of them. Except for his mullet.
The Da Vinci Code, but unfortunately, Angels and Demons it was actually the first book. Mm-hmm. And I think trying to do the first book as a sequel film took a little bit away from the story, and they just had to redo too many things to make it as good as it could be. But the third one, it's about Dante's Inferno. I'm not seeing a lot of yucks probably happening there.
Right.
So if you're looking for a lighter tone, I doubt this is going to happen.
Right.
God, I just want to know, do you think the triangle player is jealous of the cymbalist because their instrument's louder?
Where's the cellist? That's what I want to know. And like all of this, where is that person?
Down there doing your mom.
All right. Two scripts are completed. Don't leave my mom out of it. We're going to move on. Two scripts are completed.
Which level of hell is that?
Which? Damn it. I said leave my mom.
I don't know. It depends on your mom.
Clerks 3 and Ant-Man. Both the scripts are done. Both of them are turned in. Which one of these two are you guys most excited for?
You ask me now, I would have to say Clerks 3. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. Always have been. Always will be. Even though Clerks 3 just kind of seems like a cash grab or anything. It's not going to earn huge bucks. It It's not the film I was hoping he would end on, but anything he does, I'm going to see. But Ant-Man, he's one of those characters in comic books that I never really read much of, never got into. The story of a guy who can shrink down to the size of an ant just didn't interest me. So on that, I'm not all that interested, but I do like Edgar Wright, who's going to be directing it. I'm a big fan of his, especially Scott Pilgrim. I love that film.
I do too.
Can he, though, make a film that will fit in with all of the other Marvel movies? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. I don't know. It is confirmed that this is going to be the first film in the Phase 3
Marvel
section films. Of the Marvel film. So knowing that it's going to be the first one, they're going to have to really lay a lot of story and some groundwork in there. So they must have some confidence in the story, in the script that was written.
What
the
is
direction.
Ant-Man's big fucking power? Just shrink it into an ant? What does he do? How does he save anybody?
I didn't read it much. I don't know.
It sounds like he would be more irritating than anything. Like, oh crap, I got Ant-Man
in
my pants.
You know, he can infiltrate places that you can't just normally walk into.
That's it. He's like Rick Moranis from Honey and Shrunk the Kids. That's what he does.
When the villains have a picnic, they just ruin.
He ruins it. Yeah.
Which puts them in a bad mood, and then they can't focus on really beating the good guys. So.
Oh, I like it. Seriously, what is this? That's what I want to understand. I'm not really excited for either one of these. I'll go see Clerks 3, most definitely. But I want to know what Ant-Man's power... Why the fuck are people talking about him at all? It sounds like the lamest superhero ever.
It really does.
Look, I don't have that angst against it that you apparently have.
I don't have angst. I just don't understand what his powers are. Look, He's Ant-Man.
I can hear your blood pressure raising as we speak.
It's because I'm old.
I mean, I agree. I mean, I do agree to a certain extent. A lot. He was. I never really got the appeal for him. Henry Pym was the Ant-Man. He also ended up becoming Giant Man, and I mean, he went from really tiny to really big and whatever. He was never one that I really just latched onto, and I don't agree. I don't understand why in this. Obviously, like I said before, they've obviously got a huge picture that they're looking at, and for a long time now they've been dead set on using Ant-Man. So he's obviously, and especially the fact that he's kicking off. Well, you said he's kicking off Phase 3.
Yep, that's what Justin said.
So, I mean, obviously they've got big plans for him, which is, I mean, when you're talking about gods and alien beings and space, and now. You know, by the time we're starting round 3, we're talking about people who are really tiny. I mean, we're really going from one, literally one extreme to the other. So,
well, his abilities are that he's,
you Googled that shit, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. Size shifting from nearly microscopic to up to 100 feet in height, maintains his strength of his normal size even in his shrunken state. So, even in a microscopic size, he can exert the force of a grown man. So, there you go. He can be really, really tiny or really, really tall.
So, now, when he's really, really tall, is he the same strength as the regular
man? I'm assuming
man?
He's extra strong.
Oh. Well, that's not fair.
Because you couldn't really lift your own leg if you were only as strong as you normally are, but 100 feet tall.
But you'd look very imposing.
And he is an Avenger. So there is that as well. I'm sure his film will lead right into the Avengers movies.
So Nick Fury was an Avenger, and he didn't do shit. He just stood there and ordered people around.
Well, but Nick Fury also didn't get his own fucking film.
Yet.
I would see a Nick Fury film.
Over Ant-Man, sure. I would. But
well, how well do you like David Hasselhoff?
How bad do you want to see it?
He did play Nick Fury in a Nick Fury movie.
Yeah, yep. I remember seeing the clip. I didn't watch the movie, but damn.
It is awful.
And speaking of Marvel real quick, Hugh Jackman did an interview because he's doing the press for The Wolverine and damn near demanded a Wolverine and Avengers crossover, saying he'd be game for it, implying, hey, if the studios can make this happen, I know guys would be good for it. Why can't they just get along and make this shit happen?
Seriously, that needs to happen.
Everybody would make money. I don't understand. Everybody would make money.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I think if the Wolverine movie is very successful, the one that's coming out, that will be a telling tale. I mean, that'll be like, hey, heads up, this will make you a lot of money. Make this happen.
That's the one character I think is most possible, yeah. Actually.
Even
Paramount and Warner Brothers are both, they're getting together to distribute Interstellar, who's
Chris Nolan.
Christopher Nolan's sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible to pull something like this off. I mean, it's pretty big, you know. I mean, granted, it's not, you know, comic book characters, but it is big enough to where they're saying, you know what, let's get these two big groups together and put out a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
Why can't, you know, again, I totally echo those comments.
Seriously,
everybody's going to make money.
That's put together some kind of sales matrix, yeah, where each studio gets X percentage of whatever, you know, a lot, save a time frame. I mean, they managed to pull the Avengers together while they're shooting other movies. So, I mean, they can obviously schedule this shit out. Get the right people behind it and make it happen.
Studios have crossed over. I'm dipping into comic book talk. They have partnered up before. This could most definitely happen. And I cannot imagine the geekgasm that would quake through our culture.
Seriously.
If Wolverine were to show up in the Avengers.
Who could possibly suffer from that happening? Like, I mean,
nobody.
What risk is there?
I don't know, but I think it's a sad world when, because Warner Brothers owns like The Hobbit and Batman. You could see The Hobbit in a Batman movie before you can see Wolverine in fucking
Avengers.
You don't
even need to explain how Wolverine showed up.
He just happens to be there.
He walks in the door. Hey, bub, let's get to killing. And all right.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And Spider-Man, he could zip in by.
Him and Hulk yell at each other a little bit, sure.
Sony can let Spider-Man zip on through. Got that one covered. I mean, you could get all these guys. I mean, have one from each one. And just Wolverine, you
know,
crosses over.
I've got like a great opening sequence.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Drunk Brian?
The Hulk? No, not yet. The Hulk and Wolverine have had some historic bouts.
Mm-hmm.
Classic fights.
That was how the Wolverine was introduced.
Right. You start out just like that comic book. You got the Hulk who's on sabbatical or walkabout trying to hide and control his anger, whatever. He's up in the Arctic, Canada, all that stuff. Wolverine runs into him. They fight it out. And then, of course, you just work out how they go from there. But
I like
make it happen, Fox and Paramount. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Make it happen.
And one of our listeners, Paul Hannan, said, I think the appearance of Thanos makes this plausible. Karen Gillan?
Karen Gillian.
Yeah, I think it's Gillian. Was cast as a villain in Guardians of the Galaxy, so the Infinity War may be coming. Don't know what that is. All the other superheroes.
You don't know what that is.
Shh.
Even though last episode I talked about the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity Gem.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's almost like when you talk, I go,
but yeah, kind of.
All the other superheroes and their doppelgangers were in that series. They could easily fill a lot of gaps from the MU with just those two characters instead of breaking everyone out like they did in the comics. And Days of Future Past with Peter Dinklage may have some clues to their plans as well. Just please no Fantastic Four. He doesn't want Fantastic Four. I kind of don't either. I kind of want that series to just go away.
Yeah.
They never really entertain me in the comics, and the movies definitely didn't, other than Jessica Alba in that suit.
Yeah, just do with them. I mean, do with them like they did with the Hulk, and just kind of make them more supporting.
That would be great, but they're not going to be part of it. If they're going to make a big contract deal, it's not going to be for Fantastic Four. I promise you.
Well, they're rebooting Fantastic Four right now, anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yep.
Right.
Yeah,
but
they're not a huge moneymaker for.
They don't have a whole lot of the Marvel.
Well, they weren't a huge moneymaker because they got a shit cast.
Chris Evans was good.
Well, yeah, he was good. But
you got a silly putty guy and you got, you know, the hot tempered flaming guy. It just was boring. Just boring.
I thought the guy that
too
was
happy
cast
and
as the
family oriented
was actually pretty good cast.
I like Michael Chiklis. Yeah.
His voice is fine, but that shit outfit they had him in.
It looked terrible.
The foamy rocks.
Just been CGI.
The foamy rocks.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Look at my scary costume. Big pillowcases.
I'm going to get crumbs on you.
All right, let's go to Brian's Trailer Park.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. In a world of 80s-inspired neon and underage prostitution, one man must seek revenge against the person who brutally murdered his brother. Acclaimed director Nicholas Vinding Refn.
Your hero.
Mm-hmm. and Ryan Gosling team up to drive this dark tale set in the Bangkok underworld. Only God Forgives also stars Kristen Scott Thomas, who plays Gosling's mom and is getting great reviews in a dark departure from her normal and soft romantic roles she's played in the past. Aaron loved The Slow Burn so much.
I did love Drive.
Yep. I just know he's going to drive out and see this one, right?
Really? You milked that twice in one thing, huh?
I'm just getting warmed up.
it looks like Drive 2, honestly. Really not that interested. Honestly, really not that interested. I thought it looked... Ryan Gosling, who I like, is playing the same fucking guy in every single movie. And yes, I know he does it well, but I've already seen the movie. And until he does something different, I don't have a desire.
I disagree. This one looks more interesting to me than the trailer for Drive did when I first saw it. I only watched Drive because we were talking about it and everyone was raving about how artistic it was. This looks like an interesting revenge story.
I got to agree with Scotty. The first half of this trailer, I was actually getting turned off to it, to the point where I was almost kind of getting mad. Why am I watching this? And then I don't know what it was, but somewhere it took a turn and I started liking it. And by the time the trailer finished, I loved it. I was like, okay, I've got to see this film.
My two cents is actually on Kristen Scott Thomas there. I think
I loved her.
I saw a clip from that scene where she's at the table with him and he brings his girlfriend down and she's just makes things really uncomfortable. And she's phenomenal. She's a phenomenal actress outright anyway, but I've never seen her like this. She honestly, in that scene, I kept seeing Famke Janssen, even though I knew it was somebody else, but she looked like Famke Janssen a little bit. So I don't say I want to see it. I probably will check this out on video on demand though, just to, I guess, have an open mind about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to keep an open mind about this and I want to give it a chance. I don't necessarily want to see it, but I am willing to give it a chance.
I'll see it because of the pedigree, but it doesn't mean that I'm excited about it. I just think the trailer looks like more of the same. I hope it's not. Place Beyond the Pines, Drive, they're kind of the same character, even though I really love Place Beyond the Pines. I thought that was really well done, but this doesn't look like anything new for me. Yeah, I will check it out, though.
Just another Ryan Gosling not talking a lot.
Smoldering. Here. We're going to go with smoldering, because that's what he does.
Smoldering, that's it. Let's stay with that slow burn motif.
He smolders.
All right. Well, Only God Forgives opens July 19th in limited release and on video on demand. So next up is The Seventh Son. Apparently, Rooster Cogburn who's played by Jeff Bridges. He's regulated the Old West in True Grit. He's protected the living in RIPD. And now he's apparently some kind of warrior wizard in Seventh Son. So it's about a young boy named Thomas who's an apprentice to Master Gregory, who is played by Mr. Bridges. When the evil Mother Malkin gets free, it's up to the wily veteran and the young apprentice to bring her back to confinement. It's inspired by the alternative history / fantasy novel from Orson Scott Card.
Oh, shit.
Seventh Son is loaded with magic, dragons, and tons of other mythological creatures. Justin, did you read this book?
Son of a bitch.
He's deleting all of his comments right now.
Can I just tell you, I knew that. And when you said, are we going to talk about that trailer? I'm like, okay.
What? Did I miss something?
You don't know who he is?
Does somebody want to kind of explain what's going on?
Orson Scott Card is obviously an author, but he is very vocal with his anti-homosexual stance, to the point that he donates a lot of money to places that do a lot of effort to...
Cleanse you.
Yes.
All right, fine. You give me a backstory on who this guy is.
Trailer? I thought the trailer looked fine. The first time I saw it, it opened up a little weird because, the voice that Bridges is using is odd. And so I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but by the end of the trailer, I really thoroughly enjoyed what was going on. There's obviously a lot of money put into this movie because the special effects look fantastic. Once I got used to Bridges' voice, I actually kind of liked it. All in all, it really kind of seemed like it had a little bit of Hansel and Gretel. It had a little bit of The Sorcerer's Apprentice, but done in more of a Snow White and the Huntsman kind of a vibe. The only thing I really didn't like about it is Julianne Moore. I've never been a big fan of hers. And outside of Boogie Nights, I never really thought she was that good of an actress.
As long as you give Boogie Nights, we're good.
Yeah, she is fantastic in that, but how she fucks just sucks fucking everything else she's in. I'm sorry, Boogie Nights is fucking good.
She I'm a rock star.
She's trying to be Charlize Theron from Snow White and the Huntsman in this movie, and it was failing badly.
It's funny you say that, because at the end of this trailer, I felt exactly how I felt after watching the trailer for Snow White and the Huntsman the first time. Like, that looks kind of cool, but it's not my thing. But then I wound up liking Snow White and the Huntsman. So what kind of threw me off on this trailer is their attempt to at humor doesn't seem to fit in with that genre. It's like, I know it's like a weird history or whatever, but like the fantasy genre, just I've never seen that kind of humor, and I don't know if I like something fresh. What's that?
Like which part?
Like at the very end.
Other than the very ending, I didn't really remember too much funny.
I don't know, just the tone just was a little off for me. I'd have to watch it again to pinpoint it, but the end one in particular just felt like something you wouldn't see in a fantasy movie.
I actually like that end joke. You know, what does that kill?
Right, courage.
Cowardice,
yeah.
By drinking. I thought that was kind of funny, but God, I did not know this was an Orson Scott Card film.
Now you'll have to think about it.
I hate that man.
All I want to know is, why is everybody in the trailer always looking up at the camera and yelling or screaming, and Rooster Cogburn is whipping around with his sword? I'm worried about his fucking hip. He's too old to be doing this shit. It looked awfully cheesy. Awfully cheesy.
I thought the special effects looked great. Some of the creatures looked phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I really like everything about this except for Julianne Moore and Jeff Bridges. I think it's going to be one of those movies where this is just speculation. I just think it's going to be one of those that's good, except they did a poor job of casting.
Like, you kind of wish they had a little lesser known actors and maybe just gone fresh with it, or would you have preferred somebody else in that role?
Yeah, do a Thomas Jane type guy, Aaron Eckhart, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Not Rooster Cogburn.
Right. Yeah, seriously. And if you want to do Jeff Bridges, don't do the same thing you've done for two other movies now.
Yeah, what is his fucking issue? Why is he like, that movie was the biggest movie of my career. I'm going to do that for every movie I do.
What, True Grit?
Yeah, True Grit's the biggest movie in his career. So I think he just wants to, you know what, I'm going to do that forever. He can't make Tron work there, so he's just going to, I'm going to do Rooster Cogburn. I wonder if he like goes on talk shows now and, hey, how you doing? You want to talk about a new movie?
No,
The Nerdist and he did not talk like that.
Yeah, when you see, I heard him on one of the podcasts I listened to, and he sounds like the dude in real life. Like,
he does. I would much rather see the dude in a fantasy world than Rooster Cogburn, because the dude in this trailer would have been fantastic.
I watch your Highness or whatever that movie was called.
Yeah, he just swinging a sword, going, "The dude abides, man." That would have been fantastic.
How do you make a white Russian in medieval times?
When's this come out, Brian? I think it comes out in the worst possible month.
Yeah, like one or two weeks after the worst possible weekend. Seventh Son opens up on January 17th of 2014.
They are not very positive with that movie if they open it in January.
Didn't last year, though, kind of start dispelling the whole January is a shit movie month thing? I seem to recall.
You had Hansel and Gretel, and that was about it.
Didn't that horror movie that you reviewed come out in January?
The Devil Inside?
Yeah, The Devil Inside.
Yeah.
The Grey came out in January. Didn't Taken come out in January?
No. Taken came out in October. But now we sound like Blockbuster. What about that one movie with that one guy that came out that one
month? All right. Well, anyway, if you're hanging out in a Bangkok prison or even 18th century magical prison, here's how you can contact us so we can help you escape. The easiest way to call is to call or text us at 818-814-6246. Or if you like letters a whole lot better, 818-81-IMAHO. That's I'm a ho. You can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Tweet us at @H_Outsider. And of course, you can still get your kick-ass I'm a ho t-shirts at thehollywoodoutsider.com. The newly updated, revised, beautiful, spectacular, wonderfully user-intuitive website.
Woo! Yeah, it looks better anyway. Thanks for driving them to the site, Brian. Huh. That's right. Dun 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 dun. All right, now let's go to the fifth degree, where we try to play basically 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but in 5 degrees. We're going to take an actor, and the actor's going to be Ron Perlman tonight, and it's Scott's chance. He's going to try and basically stump us and see if we, who of us hoes can, you know, associate. You know how this works. Go ahead, Justin. Go ahead, Scott.
You
go ahead, Scott.
You call me Justin.
Well, I think you got a concussion. You may need to go get an MRI or something.
That microphone to the temple.
I do, man.
On you.
Man, all right, I didn't sleep at all last night.
No? In 5 degrees or less, you guys are going to match Ron Perlman with a sports movie.
Oh.
Sports movie.
I was going to need some serious
Oh, edit. I got it. You Wildcats got it. Wesley Snipes to Blade 2.
Wait, what?
Wildcats with Wesley Snipes?
Wasn't he in...
He was in Wildcat. I'm pretty sure I just
Major
said...
Major League?
Yeah, but you already missed your chance. I already won.
Was he in Wildcats?
Yes, he was in Wildcats. Him and Woody Harrelson were both in Wildcats. So, bam! 2 degrees.
Where did Ron Perlman...
He was in Blade 2, man. He was the,
gotcha,
badass
gotcha.
Dude.
Nice. I'm impressed.
He was the guy who said, "Can you blush?"
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, nice one. We'll play that again sometime soon, and hopefully I'll describe it sensical. All right. Now let's go to the big screen and review any new releases. We've got two, Pacific Rim and Grown Ups 2. The first one is the one we wish would have been bigger, but hey, what are you going to do? Justin, what is Pacific Rim about?
By bigger, I'm assuming you mean the money it made and not the size of the creatures and robots in the film?
I don't think they could get any bigger in scale.
I don't know. They might, but... Pacific Rim, this is the science fiction film that was directed by Guillermo del Toro, written by him and Travis Beecham. It stars Charlie Hunnam, Idris Elba, Rinko Kachinko. Oh, shit.
Pinko?
Kikuchi, Charlie Day, and Ron Perlman. The film is set in the 2020s when Earth is under attack by kaiju, which is Japanese for strange creature, though now it's just kind of become synonymous with giant monsters. Mm-hmm. These are colossal monsters which have emerged from a portal on the ocean floor. To combat these monsters, humanity has had to unite to create the Jaegers, which is, of course, for those who have seen it, they know it. It's German for hunters. These are gigantic humanoid mecha, each controlled by two pilots whose minds are joined by a neural bridge called Drifts. In the film, Raleigh Beckett, played by Hunnam, is brought out of retirement to pilot one of his mecha, Gypsy Danger, in the hopes of stopping the kaiju once and for all. This is a movie filled with big robots, big monsters, doing some pretty big shit. Let's go ahead and get started right off the bat, guys. On the story on this, the story of humanity's desperate struggle against what looks like impossible odds, what did you think? Did you think the story was enough? Did you think the special effects are what really had to carry it through? How'd you guys enjoy it?
I thought the story was probably one of the weakest parts. I don't want to say that it was the weakest part of this movie. It was one of the more lacking. I mean, it was basically, it just kind of set it up as far as saying, all right, here's what's been going on lately. Here's where we're at now. And then it was just kind of predictable from there on. In a movie like this, you're not expecting deep thoughts. I'm fine with it. I mean, it didn't distract from it, but it wasn't exactly very, it's fairly predictable. I'll say that.
Yeah. And I felt that every time that we were in a scene that wasn't an action scene, I was tapping my foot and wanted to be in another action scene.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Did anybody else feel like it was like Top Gun? Because felt Top Gun a lot.
In the whole hangar scene, when they're all like, I literally leaned over to my buddy and said, "You can be my wingman anytime."
I just kept thinking of like Top Gun, Top Gun, Top Gun.
I never really got a heavy, military vibe that a movie like Top Gun. No, yeah. And one of the interesting things is that Guillermo del Toro, he's not... he's a pretty well-known pacifist, and so one of the things that he wanted to do in this film to try and take away from the military aspect was to use terms like rangers, and Marshall as opposed to, you know, colonels, captains, and things like that. He wanted to give these characters different ranks that didn't make you immediately think of the military. I loved the aspect of the Jaeger pilots being looked at as almost like, you know, these celebrities. The names of their robots were inventive and colorful. You know, you didn't see a Panzer tank just driving around. These guys had color and flair, and you know, Gypsy Danger was the American mecha. The Chinese was a Crimson Typhoon. I forget the names of the others that were involved in it, but they all had their own unique looks. And I thought that was really fun that these guys were heroes and almost, you know, almost like sports athletes and not, you know, your regular average military guy. And for me, that made the story more fun.
I thought they were military all the way. I never thought anything less than just your military. I just want to say the story, because I didn't get to speak to the story. There is no story, man. It's literally a teenage boy's wet dream. Monsters versus robots. I mean, if you would have had like Megan Fox or Jennifer Lawrence, teenage boys across the world would have exploded. That's all it is. And that's all it needs to be.
Yeah, and it sounds really... like we're hating on this.
I wasn't hating on it. I just thought it was very reminiscent of Top Gun.
We're talking about the story not being that good. You don't need an in-depth story for giant robots fighting giant lizards.
Absolutely not. There's nothing deep about it, and it doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be.
I do want to say that I think the two Russian guys were severely underutilized. I wanted to see more with those.
You mean Iceman?
Yeah.
What about Charlie Hunnam, Brian?
Well, he was wanting to go into the acting section of this, but I did want to mention one other story element, and it was Charlie Day's whole part of the film where he's the nerdy science guy, and so he's going to try and figure out, you know, what's going on while the guys and the robots do the fighting. Those were the only segments of the movie where I did kind of find myself going, can they hurry this along? There's got to be some fighting going on out there.
Did you agree with me?
That's part of the story kind of let me down a little.
I kind of thought his entire character, like, you could have solved that whole problem by just one guy at the end going, hey, I figured this shit out. Seriously.
Or just have him kind of doing it in the background the whole movie, and then at the very end, oh, wait, and then bring him forward.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't have had Ron Perlman.
That's true.
That's the only thing I agree with Justin. That's the only thing I thought Charlie Day brought to the movie was Ron Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I really didn't like his arc at all.
I actually liked the two of those scientist guys banter and back and forth. I thought that was fun.
Hmm. But it wasn't as clever as what it
was trying.
As what I think they probably wanted it to be. Charlie Day is funny, but he's I think he's right now he's just proven that he's that one trick pony.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much.
But as far as the acting goes, Charlie Hunnam's the star of this. Idris Elba and Rinko Kachuki both kind of play second fiddle. How did you guys feel like they held up their end of the deal?
I thought he was Jax Teller.
We're just going to disagree this whole movie.
He's the exact same dude. Seriously, he even has that stupid swagger from the show. I like him. He's a charming guy, but that is the character.
That's from Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah. He just shoots less people. That's it.
Yeah. He just had a bomber jacket instead of a black hoodie.
Did you agree, Brian? You thought he was pretty much...
This I got to switch to the dark side on this one. I agree. It was Jax. That's all I kept. That's who I saw the whole time. I'm like, all right, he's got a cooler ride than a motorcycle.
Maybe it's what you saw, but for me, Jax, and not to go off on that whole thing, but that's an angry, angry, vicious guy. The character Rally that he played in this film was not that angry.
Jax has a lot of light moments too, and that's totally...
And he's sensitive at certain points of it and everything.
Yeah, when he's not busting some fucker's head open or shooting a bitch.
No, you agree to disagree. I thought he didn't do anything different at all. I didn't see.
All right. What about the rest of the cast?
I wasn't really impressed with pretty much anybody. And I don't know, Aaron disagrees with me. I wasn't even impressed with Idris Elba's performance.
You were so wrong.
I didn't like him.
Today we are canceling the apocalypse. I don't care how cheesy and pathetic that writing is. It was good. He delivered.
The whole, there was a scene where Charlie Hunnam's character puts his hands on him and Idris Elba gives him this look of death, like, you just touch me and whatever. It just looked like he was acting to me.
I thought he was...
just fucking awesome.
Agree to disagree. I thought that was one of my favorite scenes in the movie, honestly.
Two rules
says,
or something.
Don't mistake my calm demeanor for acceptance or whatever it was he said. And
yep.
Then we pointed his ear and just kind of leaned in. I was like, oh, shit. He is owning the screen.
He was intimidating, you know, really intimidating that one scene. I wasn't blown away by anybody either. And I didn't know whether he was supposed to be American or British.
No British.
Or what? Because his voice changed throughout the movie.
That's true, it did.
And it was like, I wasn't sure if was his British accent slipping out or was his, you know, American voice slipping out. I wasn't sure which way he was supposed to be going. But there's a
her first flying lesson. Her first flying lesson.
No, before that. It's you're kind of seeing all these characters come together, her and Idris Elba and Jax Teller's, you know, they're all kind of doing their thing. And it hit me like midway through, like, oh wait, this is a growing moment in the story, and I really don't care.
Yeah, I didn't care about many of the human characters, honestly.
I'm just like, when's something going to come busting through a wall? That's
yeah. Look, Del Toro, his movies are definitely more about the style and the look and the production and how everything relates, and that's what the movie is all about, honestly.
Yeah, I can't agree. I think Guillermo del Toro has done quite a few films that are about more than look and style. Pan's Labyrinth, Devil's Backbone. Hell, I think even the Hellboy movies have got, you know, some pretty decent story going into them. So I got to disagree with you on that. And I think Ringo did a fantastic job. She was vulnerable. She was soft when she needed to be. But I also thought she had quite an inner core of strength.
I will tell you, besides Idris Elba, she's the only one that I really liked in the cast. The other ones, I'm like, eh. You know, they're who they need to be, and they're fine. But I did like watching her arc, even if I didn't think her arc was written great. I really liked her performance. I thought she was very interesting.
I don't know, and it might be a fault of the writing and stuff too. But like in the training sequence where they're training hand to hand combat or whatever, that just felt like a cheesy thing out of the 80s. It felt awkward. I don't know. It just
felt like a volleyball game.
All right, guys. Well, what did you think of the production of this film? I mean, it's pretty obvious from every trailer that this movie is about big creatures, big robots, kicking the shit out of each other. There has to be a bright spot in this film. Is that it? And if so, how big of a bright spot was it?
Absolutely. I was smiling during every action scene of this movie. Just, I felt like I was 13 years old watching Jurassic Park for the first time or something. Like it was, you know, that big of a spectacle for me, but even more gorgeous, grander scale. It was a blast to watch. Just seeing them pick up a big tanker and using it as a baseball bat.
That was so cool.
The freaking, what do they call it, rocket elbow or something. It's just so cool. It was just, oh, it was awesome. And it looked good. I saw it in IMAX 3D. I know you didn't.
No, I didn't. I didn't see it in IMAX 3D.
I did. I was so glad I did. That looked good. The sound was awesome. What about you guys?
Yeah, I saw it in standard whatever 3D. And I thought this is the best use of 3D that I've seen in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. Just everything, the special effects, the detail with the, you know, the environment around it, whether it's, you know, smashing and falling buildings, whether it's, you know, dust in the air, whether it's snow that's being, you know, disheveled because a suit robot, you know, a Jaeger falls down on it or something, whatever the case is, it was just phenomenal. This, and I tweeted this out whenever I left the movie, this is why you go to the theater to see certain movies.
I agree 100%.
This the bigger is the screen, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And honestly, this is one of the very few movies where it is absolutely worth the extra few bucks to go see it in 3D. That's just my two cents.
I couldn't agree more.
I loved it.
Honestly, probably some of the best special effects I've seen. This is exactly what I wanted the last two Transformers movies to be, because I hated the second Transformers, and I thought the third one's okay. This was better than all three of them combined, if you ask me. Granted, I didn't love the last two, but still. It's everything I wanted because I felt like a little kid. Because seriously, like Scott said, he uses a tanker as a bat, and I almost like peed myself. Like I almost had to get up and go pee. Just everything about it was the battles were overdone. They were absolutely fantastic. There's a lot of them, so it isn't like you're gypped. I mean, the last entire 45 minutes is just one huge battle scene after battle scene after battle scene. Mm-hmm. It's just well done, man. I mean, you know, in my written review, I gave it an 8. Which I'm going to do here as well. So, I mean, But
spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But the reason I can say the acting was just okay and the story was just okay and the dialogue was kind of cheesy is because of everything else. Because this is one of those movies that doesn't have to have all those things. Not every movie has to be a fucking critic's darling. Mm-hmm. This isn't one of them. This is just something that you go to the movie and you have fun with. And I did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this film was made for special effects. It's an entire reason for existing is special effects. And you can see the millions of dollars on the screen every time these guys come up. So to say that it's a beautiful film is not putting it, not putting too fine a point on it. It's gorgeous. I saw it on a gigantic 3D screen. I loved every second of it. But I do think we should give a little bit of time to talking about the design of both the kaiju and
Jaegers.
Jaegers, goddamn, thank you. What did you guys think of the different designs? Because every Jaeger and every kaiju looked different, though the kaiju is a little harder to tell because you mostly see them at night in water. But the Jaegers, all of them had their own unique designs, and I thought each of them looked really, really cool.
Yeah, the
especially the Russian one. That fucker looked brutal with that gigantic, slab of a head.
The level of detail is just incredible with everyone. Like you said, each one felt like it was it didn't even feel like it was just like in the same family. They all felt like complete different Jaegers built from the ground up.
Yeah, one of them had
four
one
arms
of them had a
or
third
something.
Arm.
Yeah, four, wouldn't it?
No,
it was three. Crimson Typhoon.
They all bleed neon, too. That's very important, apparently. They bleed neon. And seriously, where did they have these battles? Because it rained a fucking lot. Like, a lot. Every battle was in the rain. Yeah. I would be concerned. It's very damp, very moist in the future.
Oh, and the Australian Jaeger was called Striker Eureka. I love those names. You know, Gypsy Danger, Crimson Typhoon, Cherno Alpha.
Really?
And Striker Eureka. I love those kinds of names. They appeal to that child inside
Yeah, they're,
me.
They're words that don't go together, but they go together so well.
Yeah.
It sounds like a kid made them up.
Yeah. Well, they don't go together in concept or in what they mean, but they sound good together.
Sure.
Right.
Well, and being as big a fan as I am of, the old school Japanese cartoons with all the mechs and the Robotechs and all those kinds of naming conventions are pretty common. And though, so it just falls right in line with all the things that Guillermo del Toro was wanting to pay, homage to. Even though the end of it is really kind of definitive, I'm sure there's a way they could bring in a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, Aaron already gave his verdict, so we don't have to go to him. Brian and Scotty, $10 is the price of admission. What would you give it?
Well, despite me tapping my foot during the non-action sequences, it had me grinning nonstop during every action sequence. It was a blast in its high moments and one that it just begs to be seen in the theater. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely. It starts out just high octane right out of the gate, dips down a little bit, but those, like you said, those last 45 minutes or so is just one freaking great ride. I'm giving it a strong 8.5.
Nice.
If they had taken some of that time that Charlie Day eats up and given it over to some more battles, I would give it a strong 9 out of 10. But because I did kind of feel a little bored in the middle, I got to take a point off. So, I'm going to give it an 8. I went into this with incredibly high expectations that I don't think any movie really could have lived up to. But at the end of it, I was really delighted with what I got. 8 out of 10. Thoroughly enjoyed it. People, go to the theaters, see this film. If your inner child isn't delighted, then it's dead inside. Mm-hmm. It's dead.
And just FYI, there is a little stinger in the middle of the credits.
Yeah,
it's pretty
stick
funny.
Around.
It's pretty funny.
And at the end of it, there is a neat little homage.
So. And the sad part is, one of the sad things that I found kind of sad, is I was looking at the budgets, and White House Down had roughly about $20, $30 million less of a budget. It was a $150 million movie. This is like $180. And all I'm thinking is, man, they could have had giant robots or giant monsters fight in the White House. That movie could have been awesome, too. Fucking wasted.
All of a sudden, the White House transforms
exactly.
into a giant robot.
Because let me tell you, the dialogue was just as cheesy in that movie. It just didn't have all the cool shit. Oh, definitely worth the price of admission. And I also saw Grown Ups 2, which somehow beat Pacific Rim at the box office, but we'll get there. Grown Ups 2, Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, Kevin James, David Spade return for Adam Sandler's first ever sequel. I had no idea. This is the first sequel he's ever made. So you can say what you guys want about him, but to have a guy this far in his career and never have a sequel, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Even though
they just all feel like
part two. Well, here's the plot for Grown Ups 2. Four guys bounce around their hometown all day. They run some errands. They run into the crazy cops. They hang out at the Kmart. That's actually a good section of the film. They hang out at Kmart. Naked cannonball over a cliff to escape some college kids. And then they have like a rousing 80s theme party at Sandler's house at the end. There is absolutely no plot. Sandler's wife wants another baby. That's, I guess, a plot point. Kevin James is a mama's boy. Chris Rock has no real plot point other than he's avoiding his mother-in-law the whole movie. David Spade gets handed like a teenage monster of a kid that he's never seen just so he can relate to the other three. Seriously, that's the whole movie. They go about their day and get into hijinks. That's it. I think they should have done is included like a mystery where they go looking for Rob Schneider because he doesn't pop up anywhere.
I was going to ask.
Anywhere. He's never even referenced in the whole movie. I mean, he was such an important part of the last movie, never even mentioned in this one. I guess they had a falling out. I have no idea.
Maybe he was in bed with that old chick, the whole thing.
Oh, ew. Oh. I just love the fact that they all moved back to their hometown. Like, every single one of them. Apparently, they are loaded. But what you guys really want to know is the movie funny? Yes and no. I mean, it's not deep. It's like I said, it's just like The Last Grown-Ups. If you like The Last Grown-Ups, you're probably going to like this one. It has more than a few laughs. I laughed out loud several times. Shaquille O'Neal is actually really funny. In the movie.
Really?
I surprised the shit out of me. I'm like, Shaquille O'Neal has a sense of
Put
humor.
Put your hands up.
Yeah. And he's actually got quite a few jokes that are actually, you know, pretty funny. Taylor Lautner, here's a clue that you do not have a high class of actors in your group. When Taylor Lautner shows up and out-acts your entire cast, you should reevaluate your choice of acting career. Because seriously, he was good. I would call Taylor Lautner good. First time I've ever said he's good in anything.
Are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
Okay.
Yeah. It shocked the fuck out of me. Bottom line is, if you're looking for clever and hysterical comedy, go somewhere else because this isn't it. But if you like Grown Ups 1 and you don't mind that light comedy where you smile a lot, chuckle, laugh, you know, get a couple of out loud laughs every now and then, it's worth a matinee. I mean, it's not deep. It's $5 out of 10. It's a good 10. And Selma Hayek is almost 50 years old, and I squeed every time that woman's on screen. It's ridiculous how gorgeous she still is. Holy jeebus. Box office. Despicable Me 2 opened to $43.8 million. It's got $228 million in the till. It's going to probably end up with about $350 million total before it's all said and done. Grown Ups 2 opened to $41.5 million, which is more than the last one, so you cannot kill Adam Sandler. I know, right? That's a big sigh, man. Pacific Rim, $37.2 million. It just goes to prove that internet buzz does not translate to dollars.
Now, that's just U.S., right?
That's just U.S. It made about $50 million world overseas, but you know, it's got a long way to go before it starts making its money back.
That
fucking America.
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 The Heat, $14 million. It's made $112 million so far. And Lone Ranger dropped 60% to $11.5 million.
Yikes.
$71.4 million total. It cost $215 million to make it. Disney actually forecasts they're going to lose $200 million on that movie.
Poor Gore Verbinski.
I know. I like him.
All right, folks. So we have got three movies we're going to be talking about this week. All three opening up on July 26th. The first one, prop star Ho listener Ashley for making us aware of it, Breaking the Girls. This is a crime thriller directed by Jamie Babbitt and starring Sam Anderson, Sean Ashmore, Agnes Bruckner, and Shanna Collins. Yeah, I don't know many of them either. Anyway, the film's about two girls who make a pact to kill each other's enemies and what happens when one of them gets cold feet. I don't know. That sounds like a rom-com to me. What about you, Aaron? You ready to break some girls in?
Yeah, I think it looks kind of interesting. A little cheesy, but I would check it out. I wouldn't pay for it in a theater, probably.
No.
But
no.
I would definitely run it.
It's an interesting plot, though.
And it looks naughty. I like that.
It's one of those stories that you see, and you're like, why hasn't that been done before, that idea?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it sounds like I want to see where it goes.
It kind of sounds like Bound. Do you guys remember that one? Did you see that one?
I never actually saw it.
Oh, that's a great movie. It reminds, or the trailer reminds me of the movie Bound, which I highly recommend if you haven't seen it.
Like it's two girls are macking on each other?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly.
There you go. Was it, Brian?
Wasn't there some kind of 80s or 90s comedy where a couple of buddies agreed to kill their friends or something like that? Or maybe I'm thinking of that.
If you're personal.
Was that maybe I'm thinking of Horrible Bosses or something. I don't know.
Your time in the Coast Guard? Maybe that was it.
Oh, yeah, no, Horrible Bosses. Yeah, all three of them are going to kill each other's boss.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, sexier.
Yeah. Yes, it's a lot sexier.
So it's, makes it better right off the bat. All right, it's film number two. Speaking of romantic comedies, The To-Do List. This is a film about high school kids where none of the actors look even remotely young enough to actually be in high school. Directed by Maggie Carey, The To-Do List stars Aubrey Plaza, Bill Hader, McLovin, and Rachel Bilson.
He just calls him McLovin.
He doesn't even have a name.
That's who he is.
Fuck him. That's his name.
That's right. Feeling pressured to become a slut before she heads off to college, Brandi Clark makes a list of things to accomplish before hitting campus next fall, where I'm assuming she'll sleep with all of her professors to keep that nerd GPA average intact. Scotty, given the circumstances of your upbringing, I'm assuming that you were a virgin until you graduated with your bachelor's. This film maybe hit too close to home and won't be on your list of movies to see?
Oh, I actually laughed out loud watching this trailer. I watched it a second time. I think I really want to see this movie. You guys...
Really?
You got to understand, you guys get... You have all of your 80s movies. There's tons of 80s movies, like homages to that. I grew up... The 90s was my heyday, so like this is like my kind of music. It's
I could see that.
And Bill Hader is hilarious in this trailer. That scene at the end is really funny. They've got all the font is like Trapper Keeper font, like in the trailer. Like
the fact that you know that off the top of your head. Well, I guess you teach.
I wish Trapper Keepers would come back. I loved them.
Oh, it was like it was. Oh, just I'm all about seeing this. I think it looks really.
It's amazing how like turned on you are from Trapper Keepers.
Well, no, it's just
the font.
Like,
I'm sorry, not even the Trapper Keeper.
You
the font.
Can hear his pants getting tighter.
That font, that Trapper Keeper font. Oh yeah.
No, it's just it's a
hearing the
nostalgia. It's a nostalgia thing.
Oh, if only they had a lunch pail.
Unfortunately, this movie looks like shit. I like Aubrey Plaza, even though I do think she kind of plays the same person all the time with that sarcastic kind of dour look on her face. But I don't know. I watched this trailer and I could not have been more bored. It looks like crap to me. It looks like crap.
Oh, it's not. It's gonna do terrible.
Hey, every it surprises. Grown Ups 2 beat Pacific Rim. You never know, Scott. You just never know.
Yeah. Scotty, I mean Aaron and Brian. Though, what did you think of this?
I think I want to hear more about Wolverine.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for Wolverine.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and end this thing with the third and. Obviously, most desired film to see, The Wolverine. Like I even need to explain this one, is Fox's next superhero action movie. Directed by 310 to Yuma's James Mangold, this film stars Hugh Jackman, Famke Janssen, and Rila Fukushima. In modern-day Japan, Wolverine is out of his depth in an unknown world as he faces his ultimate nemesis in a life-or-death battle that will leave him forever changed. Vulnerable for the first time and pushed to his physical and emotional limits, he confronts not only lethal samurai steel, but also his inner struggle against his own immortality. If movies made money based on the number of veins popping out on its actors' arms, the Wolverine would already be making enough money to buy a small country, maybe even Canada. Are you ready to cut into this one, Brian? All snickety-snickety?
My claws are popped. Man, yeah, this is absolutely, man, this is... I'm so ready for this. This is one of my more anticipated movies of the year. So, I mean, there's really not much to be said about it. I mean, obviously, we're well-known, most of us comic book geeks, X-Men fans. This is just another, just another step in it. So, I'm ready.
X-Men's actually probably my least favorite of the Marvel properties that are out. Oh, it is. But Wolverine is my favorite character.
Okay, we can agree to disagree on that.
But Wolverine is probably one of my favorite characters. Hey, I love Wolverine. I just the X-Men's just okay to me. But I love Wolverine. I love Hugh Jackman's representation of Wolverine. I think he nailed it as well as you can with him still being sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking forward to it. And I fuck everybody else. I thought the last Wolverine movie was fun.
I liked it.
I don't, you like everything, Scott.
No, I got a lot of flack for it. I don't like everything.
Just kidding. But people were like hating on me. Oh, you can't like that. That movie sucked. It was awful. It was just horribly done. Da 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 da. Minus that ending with the destruction of the Deadpool character. Outside of that, the movie was actually pretty good. I liked it. I can still watch it. I enjoy it. I don't feel bad about it. No guilty pleasure here, man. I just like it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to this, even if it's a little darker.
You know, I've seen this trailer so many times in the last few weeks because obviously the movie's starting to come out. And normally when I see a trailer over and over and over again, I get fatigued by it and start to just like not really want to see it anymore. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, this one, the more I see it, the more I want to go to the theater and see it. Right, I'm just
really,
really stoked for it. I don't know why that is because I usually just get worn out on them, but...
I'm actually kind of in your boat on this. I'm kind of getting tired of the trailer. So I if the trailer comes on when I go see a movie, I get up and go to the bathroom and come back. I don't want to see it again. I want to wait and see the movie.
Right.
So. Yeah, I really look forward to seeing this. I can't wait to see the Silver Samurai and how they're going to realize him on film. The Japanese woman that finds him and brings him to Japan, Rila Fukushima, this is apparently her first acting role, and I don't know. She looks like she knows what she's doing in this one, so I can't wait to see it. That's definitely the movie that I'm most anticipating to see. But can you guys imagine what might have happened if Doug Ray Scott had been cast as Wolverine? Because he originally was, yeah, but then he had to back out.
Thank the Lord.
Ugh.
Thank God.
And do you know why he had to back out? Because of his commitments to Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
How would you like to be that guy right now when he's doing his Hemlock Grove press tour? And somebody's like, so, how do you feel about not getting that Wolverine part? And he sees, like, Hugh Jackman doing Les Miserables. He's at the Oscars, and, you know, he just made $50 million.
Yeah.
I'll bet you he has a picture of him on a dartboard, just whipping him at him every day.
Pulled it off. He wouldn't be in the same place.
So. No. He just would have been the angry Wolverine, just angry all the time.
All right, guys. Well, we probably don't need to do this, but it's tradition of these three movies, Breaking the Girls, The To-Do List, and The Wolverine. Which one will you most likely be seeing in theater, Scotty?
For sure, The Wolverine.
Aaron?
The Wolverine. The Wolverine.
Wolverine, that's right. Brian?
The Wolverine.
Yep, definitely. All four of us will be bringing you a review shortly.
Mm-hmm. But I will be watching Breaking the Girls in private as soon as I can.
As soon as it's streaming.
Yep.
It will be streaming.
As soon as I figure out how to clear my history on Netflix.
Subscribe on iTunes, your Stitcher Radio app. Give us a thumbs up if you listen to us there, please. Or any RSS feed. We're also now global. We're across the pond on audioboo.com. So thanks to those guys for hosting us over there.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. And those that get it correct, we'll get a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was we didn't have one because we didn't run it because we had a 16-hour show. So this week it is...
I think it's still recording, isn't it?
I think so. I don't even think it's done yet. This week it's Brian Cern, so if you think you know what it is, let us know. Here's your clip.
Can't believe my grandmother actually felt me up.
What's happening, hot stuff?
His name is Long Duck Dong.
What?
Long Duck Dong. He came down with Grandma and Grandpa Baker. He's an exchange student that's living with them.
Yeah, well, he's totally bizarre.
He is not. He is a very sweet boy.
I just hope you bring the sheets and mattresses after he leaves.
Okay.
I'm born ready.
Now let's go to the couch. We talk about TV and home video. There's not much of news, but there are a couple things. I use things very loosely because Sharknado, I don't know what the fuck that is. But... Orange is the New Black is a new Netflix series, and what it's about is it stars Taylor Schilling as Piper. She's a former lesbian who muled some drug money a few years back.
Dandelion.
She fueled some drug money. She muled some drug money a long time ago, and now the crime's caught up to her. She gets incarcerated for 15 months for it. She's forced to leave her straight-as-an-arrow fiancé, who's played by Jason Biggs, and we follow her stint in the minimum security prison, where she encounters a bunch of quirky characters and that sort of thing. It's from the creator of Weeds. She also runs into the person she believes turned her in, and that's Alex, who's her former Dandelion.
Played by who?
Played by Laura
Prepon.
By Laura
Prepon?
Kinda naked. Prepon.
Yeah, she's kinda naked. N-E-K-K-I-D.
In the first 5 seconds of the first episode of the pilot.
Yeah, it's pretty sad that I paused it as soon as it started.
Burning that on your screen.
But anyway, I mean, this is it's an interesting show. We've all seen prison shows, but it's not like Oz. It's not quite that drastic.
Oz meets Weeds.
Yeah, kind of. So what did you guys think? I mean, you've seen the episodes. What did you think?
I don't know. I'm afraid to say I liked it.
Why?
Because I like everything, apparently.
That's true. Well, then
you do.
if you tell me you like Sharknado, then yes, you do.
No, I'm really digging the show. I'm only about 4 or 5 episodes in, but it's funny, but it's also, they do the, I don't want to piss off Brian, but they do the Lost thing where each episode kind of follows one of the characters and they do a little bit of the backstory of
that's actually how I explained it to Justin, so.
Right. They how that character was before they went to prison and a little bit of what happened, and there's some really interesting characters.
The thing, before you go any further, the thing I like best about that is they were secondary characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the backstory wasn't the people I thought it was going to be about. Would you agree, Justin? I mean, from I've seen several of the episodes, I think 5 or 6 now. I haven't seen the whole series. But every story I've seen has not been any of the ones that I thought it would be.
No. And you know what? I'm about 4 or 5 episodes into it, too, so I haven't finished it. The first episode goes back and forth in time with our main actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really sick of that device. It doesn't matter what TV show or movie it's in. I'm so tired of seeing it. It is so played out. It's ridiculous. And so I texted Aaron and said, please tell me they don't keep doing this through the whole thing. And Aaron, like he just said, told me each episode's about a particular other character. And so they kind of tell their backstory. And I was like, I wish they wouldn't do that, but okay. Yet they still do it with her, too.
Mm-hmm.
The lead actress, even in the other episodes, they're going back in her history.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, not as much, but they're still doing it. And it kind of, I hate that. It is such a overused cliche, but the show itself is well done. The lead actress, she is cute as a button. I think she does a really good job of playing, you know, a waspy kind of character suddenly dumped into jail. All in all, it's really enjoyable. It's funny, interesting characters. If you're a Weeds fan, you're going to recognize several actors in this, and a surprising role for Captain Janeway in this one.
Oh yeah, the Russian.
Yeah, Red.
Yeah, she's actually pretty good. I really like the backstories too. I mean, I really can't say it enough. That's the part that I've liked so much more than anything else, is that it's not just the main characters that I'm seeing backstories. I'm seeing characters that I didn't even know were relevant in the series. Like, because they're not relevant until that episode.
Right.
So it's, I really like that.
And Laura is it Prepon? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Prepon.
She is really convincing as a lesbian.
I don't know what that means. She digs in there? What
no, is it? She doesn't look like she's wincing as she's kissing.
Well, that's called
acting. Like going, ooh. She gets in there. She does it. She commits.
Not, I mean, not even just like the physical stuff. Just like when she's talking to, when they're doing the flashbacks of when she and Piper were in a relationship. And just, she's very sultry and they get over here and I'm going to do things to you kind of way. That, she pulls it off very well.
We can tell Scott's getting a little.
And brunette is really good for her.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. Way better than blonde.
Better
than blonde.
I do want to ask, has there been any thing that Jason Biggs has ever done where he doesn't jerk off at some point?
Well, at least it's not into a pie.
Yeah, that's true. But
or a sock.
I'm watching it, and I'm, please don't tell me he's going to do it. Please, oh, God. Can you not take a job where you don't jerk off at some point?
Well, but he's not the only guy in this one that's been jerking
off. No, that's true. That's true. All right, now let's go to the Twitter sensation, Sharknado. Everybody's talking about it. Ooh, blah, blah. Scott, what did you think? What is it about? Tell us about what Sharknado is.
Well, first off, Sharknado
almost called it Tardnado.
Is a sci-fi movie. So it's just
Siffy
movie. It's only on TV. It aired this past week. I didn't even know. I honestly thought this movie already existed. I could have swore I saw this at Redbox or at some point. And when I saw people talking about it on Twitter, I'm like, I gotta check it out just because everybody is talking about it. I'm not joking. Like, every other post that night was about Sharknado mm-hmm. and how hilarious it was. So the story is basically...
Ironically, those people didn't actually watch it, but that's beside the point.
Basically, there's a hurricane in L.A., which is weird to begin with.
Yeah.
Hurricane in L.A.
Yeah, it's usually a little more southern climates. But
right. Sure. Sharks are swept up into the storm and start attacking people in the city, which is now flooded. And a bunch of people are trying to escape. That is your whole story. Basically, it's an excuse
in a tornado
to get... That's the thing, is that it's called Sharknado, and it's more... I mean, there are eventually tornadoes, but it's like... It starts out as hurricane, but you can't say Sharknado.
Do they explain, like, scientifically why they're still alive in these tornadoes? Because there's not really that much water.
No, it just kind of just happens.
They're just flying around. I saw bits and pieces. I didn't see the whole movie because I couldn't.
No,
do
I mean,
it. I tried.
Do we really care about the scientific veracity of Sharknado?
I kind of do.
Here's the thing: is like the only actor that you will recognize in this is Tara Reid from like the American Pie movies. If Tara Reid is your marquee name, mm-hmm. you know you're in for trouble. And
yeah. I'm sorry, Ian Ziering is in this.
Ian Ziering, yeah.
Yeah. Hello, 90210 fans. What?
Ian 902, who are you? That's what they should call him.
This is a movie that is trying way too hard to be campy. It's trying to be a crappy movie.
That's what I thought.
Purpose.
I don't understand what... Yeah.
Like, there's... You know, I love crappy movies. We used to do shitty movie night at my house where we, like, get together and just watch and laugh at some horrible bad movies. Mm-hmm. This one is... That's what I wanted from this one. And I got into it. And it's just so bad that it's not even funny. Some of the concepts are funny. There's a couple things that are like, oh, this is pretty cool. There's a line, not making mm-hmm. this up, where they're in a house. The house is flooded, and they're shooting up sharks with shotguns. The whole place is just basically red. It's all red from shark blood. And some guy goes, looks like it's that time of the month. It's like the dumbest, yeah. like
I saw that one, and... There's a couple of stupid things. I did like the Army of Darkness reference.
Okay.
Because he's running around with a chainsaw and a shotgun. That's totally an Army of Darkness reference. I like the swimming pool blowing up because that's what swimming pools should do, is explode. I really loved my favorite. Like, this is my favorite part of the. I didn't watch the whole movie, but I watched like bits of it. Like, I had it on and I couldn't stand to sit there and actually watch it. So I was mm-hmm. doing other things and I just caught clips. So I can't give you an accurate review of the theatrical presentation of Sharknado. But. I can tell you that when he grabs his chainsaw and he lunges into the shark's mouth and then, you know, saws his way out a little bit later.
Spoilers?
It's in the trailer. You can't miss it. Oh, that was a little bit of B-movie genius. Seriously. But when he comes out of the shark, it's really fucking gross. It looks like shark afterbirth or something. And,
yeah.
Oh, God. But there's some
Aaron, I didn't see your name listed on the...
I'm sorry, Scott.
This.
I'm sorry,
this
Scott.
This is Scotty.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. This is not
the swimming pool blew up. Let me just say that again. It blew up.
Like at the end of Bad Boys 2?
Yeah. Yes. Water exploded, Justin. There's
like the
with
surface,
fire.
The surface of the water is on fire because he threw some...
And it explodes.
And it blows up. This isn't a movie that I would by any means recommend unless you are... With a group of like 6 to 10 of your buddies and just drinking heavily.
Yeah. Wasted.
Like, because.
Wasted.
That would be fun, but it's not a great, crappy movie. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
we've talked about The Room, we've talked about a bunch of other movies. It's not one that you want to shelf for anything. It's a sensation, but not in a good way.
But they are making a part two, and it's going to be set in Manhattan. So get ready. Sharktastrophe is coming.
Sharknado.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever it is. There's like 1,000 different variations.
Is that what this episode is going to be? Sharknado?
Oh, please do that.
No, that's not going to happen.
Come on.
I am not jumping on that fucking train.
Sharknado.
No.
You don't have a hair in your ass.
What do you think people are going to want to click on the download for Sharknado or Pacific Rim? Well,
Sharknado? Yeah.
Sharknado.
Once they hear this conversation, you are going to get hammered with tweets and Facebook messages, I guarantee you.
We'll see.
Big mistake.
Really?
Yeah.
You're really committing now. So if I change the name, you're all for it.
If you change it to Sharknado, I'm all aboard.
Absolutely.
All right.
This is a Brian Strother Park moment.
But I'm not changing the picture. It's still going to be Pacific Rim picture.
Really?
That's fine.
Yeah, because I already set everything up. All right, Scott, let's go to DVD and Blu-ray.
I've just got three of them for this week. This is for the week of July 23rd. First up is Trance, an art auctioneer who has become mixed up with a group of criminal partners with a hypnotherapist in order to recover a lost painting. It stars James McAvoy, Vincent Castle, and Rosario Dawson. It is a Danny Boyle flick, so I will be checking that one out as well. Apparently it's James McAvoy week because he also is starring in Welcome to the Punch. It's about an ex-criminal, Jacob Sternwood, who is forced to return to London. When his son is involved in a heist gone wrong, this gives his nemesis, Detective Mac Lewinsky, one last chance to catch the man he's always been after. It also stars Mark Strong and Andrea Riseborough. Lastly, we've got Vehicle 19. A foreign traveler, played by Paul Walker, unknowingly picks up a rental car that will tie him to a web of corrupt local police. And that's all we've got. With that, we'll move on to... yeah, pretty much. All right, with that, we'll move on to recasting the classics. This is where every other week one of our hosts gets the honor of recasting a classic film. This week it is Brian's turn, and he will be recasting The Breakfast Club. The four characters he will be recasting are Andrew Clark, John Bender, Claire, and Allison. Good luck, Brian. Let's hear it.
All right. All right, well...
Don't fuck this up, Brian.
Yeah, don't do it, man.
I haven't fucked one up yet.
Yeah, you have.
Oh, don't be hating on Reservoir Dogs, man.
Oh, that was so good.
Still bitter.
All right, first one is Andrew Clark or Andy Clark. He was the jock played by Emilio Estevez. I'm going to go with Michael B. Jordan.
Nice.
From Chronicle. I think that's probably his biggest hit, as far as I know, anyway.
Oh, Fruitvale Station. Keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. Gotcha. Next up is John Bender, the rebel, played by Judd Nelson. This one was really kind of tough. I wanted to go with Taylor Kitsch because he's got the good hair, kind of like Judd Nelson. But I went with somebody a little bit younger, a little bit, I think, who can have a little bit of a darker edge, and that's, oh God, this hurts to say it, but Dave Franco.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, maybe, I guess. That's not really who I would pick, but you're going a different direction.
Well, So, again.
Dave Franco.
That's James Franco's brother.
Jump Street.
Well, okay. I got that shit, but who the fuck is he? What has he been in?
He was in Now You See Me. He was the other guy of the
comedian. Oh, that fuckhead?
Yeah, that's what I do. See, I'm trying not to get Brian shit this time, so you can if you want.
I like that one.
He's okay.
I mean, he's fit for the role. I'll give Brian that. Just for some reason, when I see him on the screen, I want to punch his face in. I don't know why.
I do too. And I think that's part of it because he's really kind of an unlikable character. And I think if you kind of put in the little dark background and the whatever's dad beating him around.
No, Dad. What about you?
I like Taylor Kitsch better, but
can you see him with his fist in the air and then
Taylor Kitsch
at the
is
end?
Way too old for.
Yeah, that was I had to back out of that one. Like I said,
I don't know. Judd Nelson looked like he was 36 when he fucking did that movie.
That's a valid point. Next up, Claire Standish. She's the princess, played by Molly Ringwald. Going with Jane Levy. She's the lead actress.
Evil Dead.
Yeah, from The Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm. I like her. Yep.
Yeah, I kind of think she's a ginger, naturally. So. Kind of fits.
Kinda.
So
she was a brunette in Evil Dead.
Yeah.
But in real life, yeah, she does seem to support the red.
Fair enough.
Yeah, good choice.
All right. Well, last is Allison Reynolds, who's the kind of basket case. She was played by Ally Sheedy. This time around, going with somebody who plays, she's kind of a darker character in some of her stuff, but she's really kind of she's got the sarcasm down pat. That's Kat Dennings from
I love Kat Dennings. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good choice.
That is a good choice.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not as good as Anna Kendrick, but you know, it'll
well,
do.
She could really hold that lipstick.
You know, there. I wanted to go with Chloe.
Come on, really? Nobody.
I'm laughing my ass off.
Okay.
I got it. Oh, I got it. I mean, go to Twitter, you'll understand too.
Sexist joke, and I get nothing.
Go to Twitter, you'll understand. Make sure your filter's off.
Good pick, though, Brian. Good pick.
All right. Well, in 2 weeks, Justin, you got plenty of time to think about this one. So I want you to recast one of my favorite comedies. Beetlejuice.
Ooh.
Oh, ooh.
That's ballsy.
Of course, the title character, Beetlejuice, played by Michael Keaton.
How will you ever recast Gina Davis?
Who says I want you to recast Gina Davis?
It's sarcasm, but go ahead. It's a joke.
Lydia Deetz, played by Winona Ryder. Adam Maitland by Alec Baldwin. And, of course, Barbara Maitland, played by the foreshadowed Gina Davis. Thank you, Aaron. God
You're welcome.
Damn.
Good luck.
Shut.
Fuck. All right.
Got it, man. Beetlejuice.
So is Johnny Depp completely out of the running for Beetlejuice?
He better be.
No, he's always up for every single role out there.
Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
I'm gonna take the catch.
That's true.
As long as it's a previous character, right, Brian?
That's right.
And it requires a lot of makeup, so you can't see his face.
And it does.
Because he's got to hide the pain.
Because he's insecure.
He's insecure. I'm telling you, I think he's insecure. let's go to from the. I'm not saying it's valid. I mean, obviously, he's a lot better looking than I'm ever going to be.
Obviously.
Fuck all of you. Let's go to from the outside in.
Obviously. Sorry, I had to get that one in there, too.
Every week we talk about actors and their big roles.
What?
High five.
God, Brian. We are just like, we're like drifting right now, just sharing one brain.
It's like a neural handshake or something.
It is. It's actually like the fourth joke tonight that
we've been tripping over each other.
Yep.
All right.
No. Let me in the door first. No. It's my turn.
Every week we talk about actors and their big roles in even bigger movies. And we talked about if the true movie star is dead back in episode 71, as Brian clearly alluded to me earlier. But Forbes just released how much money the top 10 actors made last year. And while no one can argue that Robert Downey Jr. was worth $75 million, are actors really worth the millions they get paid? I mean, what about the writers, the directors, and especially the special effects people? I seriously spend more of my money now on special effects than I ever do for an actor in a movie. So my question to you, do you guys think this is balanced, or do you think the times should start changing?
Well, the capitalist would always say that a person gets paid whatever somebody, you know, feels is appropriate to pay them, whether it's $1 or $1 million. If you're willing to pay them $1 million, then they're obviously worth that $1 million. But when you look at most movies, a lot of the reason you go to see those movies maybe isn't because of the special effects or because of the director, but it's because it's got George Clooney in it, or it has whatever actor or actress that you like. And because they are the face of these movies and they're the ones that go out and do the press junkets, maybe it is appropriate that they make the lion's share of the money. But I do think that most of the time, these people are overpaid, and there are a lot of people behind the scenes that make them look as good as they do, and they don't get the recognition or probably the money they deserve. I mean, I saw a discussion with some smaller special effects houses, and I was surprised at how many of them are basically just operating hand to mouth, that they don't make enough money, and a lot of them have had to close down because they just don't make enough money. And I'm thinking, fuck, how many movies have I seen this year that are just filled soup to nuts with special effects? They're all over the place. So how are they not making money? But they're not.
Mm-hmm.
The studio behind the special effects for Life of Pi, which won an Oscar, is bankrupt and restructuring and moving out of the country to, I believe, Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
Canada.
Goddamn Canada, stealing all our jobs.
You got to remember, too, guys, the typical moviegoer, as in people that aren't on a movie podcast or film critics or that kind
of
thing.
You mean you a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Yes.
Still.
Okay.
Still. A lot of people see movies not necessarily for who made it, but who they actually see on the screen.
But see, I think that's changing, though. I don't think it's like that anymore. I mean, look at granted, there are a lot of like previously established characters like your Thors and your Captain America, anything based on a comic book, you know, those characters are established. But there's a lot of franchises that are built now off people that aren't well known. So I think you can make a good movie without...
Yeah, but those people get recognized at the very beginning, the opening title sequence, you say special effects by this person or directed by this, and then they get in the credits, which nobody reads anyway.
Yeah.
And then the faces, like Brian, like Justin was saying, you see the rest of those people for 2 hours straight. You see them. They're up front in center. You a lot of people don't even know what the directors look like or the work that goes into it. I would think that a lot of people think that actors are doing most of the work.
These actors go in a magic box and then suddenly come out. Is that a real hammer?
Well, not to take anything away from the jobs that actors do. They do work
extremely
hard, especially with these action movies where the guys have to look like bronzed gods. They spend weeks and months working out and getting up at 3 a.m. to eat cod to then go to bed and get back up and work out. There's a lot that goes into it, getting into those trailers at 4 a.m. to get the makeup done. And I never want to take anything away from them. And you know, the reason that we love movies, most of them, even though they may be full of special effects, but Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, that's really what made, you know, you love that character. So
I would agree, yeah.
They obviously deserve some money, but it's just, you know, between the writers and everything they have to go through and the special effects and the stunt people. Unfortunately, it's much easier to pay money to one person than maybe it is to a company that's full of nameless grunts that really do the job. I don't quite know why there is such a disparity and why the actors can get so much money while so little is left for everybody else.
It's not sad enough that the special effects people never get any kind of Oscar recognition or very little. And the stuntmen get very little recognition. But all the people that do all this work, you know, they don't really make that much. It's just, it's kind of sad to me. I understand why the big guys, the main guys, Channing Tatum, I understand why he gets paid what he does. I understand why Mark Wahlberg somehow makes that money. I don't know why people pay that much to see him, but hey, Denzel Washington, guys like that, I get it. But so many of these movies are reward the people that do the work, that make them look so pretty. You know, it's not just these actors showing up and making it all happen. It's really not.
Who was it that recently, was it Robert Downey Jr.? Somebody made sure that in their contract or something, they fought for money for some other people?
Downey did. Yeah, he got money for the Avengers. Other Avengers. Yeah.
Right. Oh, the other actors.
The other actors.
Right. The other actors.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah, but have you looked at the credits, though? Have you seen how many people work in the special effects?
Oh, God. Just like the special effects area.
Yeah, it
really is. I mean, hundreds, literally hundreds of people. So, and you know, they're not getting paid by the studio. It's whatever company they work for, ABC Special Effects or something like that, is getting paid. And then they're just getting their whatever salary. They're $35,000, you know, maybe $50,000 a year or whatever. So,
fair enough.
You know, it's one of those. I don't think it's cut and dry. Is it the people that the actors that bring you to the movie, or is it the special effects? I think it's really a combination of both. I mean, you see Christian Bale in a movie. Okay, all right, cool. It's a Christian Bale movie. I might check that out. You see Christian Bale swinging in a Batman suit or flying a bat wing or something like that across the sky.
And you have to check that out.
Yeah, you absolutely. So, I really think it's one of those one hand feeding the other type of things.
That's fair enough. Well, speaking of, I mean, you know, we don't want to spend the whole 45 minutes talking about how much money we don't make. But speaking of money, the last few weeks we've had some of the biggest disappointments of the year. The $200 million Lone Ranger movie, flop. Pacific Rim isn't doing as well as they'd hoped it would do. White House Down, $150 million, and it's going to end with less than $100 million. All three of these opening within 14 days of each other, and all three of them failing to make much of a dent in the box office. So do you guys think, and these are some of the biggest names in Hollywood, I mean, you're talking Johnny Depp, Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx, Charlie Hunnam's not quite, but, you know, Ron Perlman, box office draw. Is it a case of just too many choices, or are people getting sick of the spectacle during the second half of the summer? Do you think they're just tired?
I think that with these three movies in particular that you're talking about, I would almost call these anomalies because they were not catering to broad audiences. Pacific Rim is for the sci-fi nerds. Lone Ranger is for the older people that actually remember what the Lone Ranger is, which...
Hey, careful, you son of a bitch.
Hey, I remember Lone Ranger. Don't get me wrong. The White House Down movie, we had a similar movie like that a few months ago. You know.
Yeah.
So the key to a summer blockbuster is catering to a wider audience. Look at, I mean, this may be, you may not think this is a good example, but Despicable Me 2. It's a kid's movie. But it's kids going to the movie and their parents that have to take them to there. So you're hitting all cylinders there.
Fair enough.
You know, but it's also a movie that parents can still enjoy. It's not like taking them to a Wiggles movie or something like that. A
Wiggles movie.
So
I like the fact that you know what that is.
He teaches kids.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're going to go with? That's the reason?
Okay. That's what I'm trying to.
Yeah. Aaron's got some home movies that feature the title Wiggles in it, but.
Jesus, Brian.
It's a whole different type of movie.
I do think that the sheer number of big movies this year, it does start to feel a little overwhelming, just the number that are hitting. Is this the most packed summer ever?
Yes.
I haven't run any numbers, so I don't know, but it sure feels like it.
And I think it's one of the – I mean, we'll talk about when we wrap up the summer at the end of the summer, but so far I'm already exhausted, like, from all the spectacle, and it's mostly been pretty decent. I haven't seen, like – a really bad movie, you know, which that's pretty impressive this far in the summer. Mm-hmm. Everything I've seen has been pretty good.
But is it almost too much of a good thing though? I mean, is it
fuck
almost,
yes. Yeah.
It's really kind of cannibalistic in a way, because you've got these giant tentpole movie that comes out on January or July or June 1st. And then there's another one, June 8th. And then there's another one, June 15th. And it's just going, like you say, it's exhausting. It's like, for God's sakes, man, give me a break. I got to take out a loan to watch out the, you know, to watch the rest of the movies. There's still 8 more movies coming out that I want to see.
And it's funny you mentioned the money aspect of it, because that was where my mind initially went when we brought up this topic, was, well, movies are so expensive and a lot of people say, oh, the economy is still bad. And I get so tired of that argument. We just had 4th of July where people basically burned up their money.
Yeah.
Literally and blew up money.
Literally.
And
like a swimming pool.
But yet we can't afford, you know, just that. My initial thought was to say that that's part of it. But people will find ways to come up with money to do things, even
absolutely.
If it's luxury.
I think there's honestly too many choices right now. Mm-hmm. I think there's too many big movies. Brian, you were talking about one movie every week. I think it's more like two or three big movies.
Right, yeah. If you want to go per average, it's probably like 1.5, 2 or so like that, you know, every week. And it's not just, well, this one looks good. It's like, this is a special effects laden, mm-hmm. woohoo type of movie. And it's every single week there's at least one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah. I hate to say it, but I don't want that. I need one of those weeks where it's a James Franco movie or a Seth Rogen movie that I just go, you know what? I'm going to pass on that shit.
Well, and I talk to a lot of people that tell me, man, I see maybe a movie once a month or something. Mm-hmm. And then you have to, like, well, which one of these high-budget movies am I
going to see?
Which one
would you recommend?
You know what I mean? I mean, we see movies every weekend, but
that's honestly how I can tell you how impressed I am with the summer, because people have, you know, they ask me all the time, podcast, what's the best movie to see right now? And there's like 3 or 4 ones I would recommend. I mean, and there's not usually most summers, you know, any given time, I can pick one movie, maybe two, mm-hmm. but never 4 or 5. I mean, I would still say World War Z, Man of Steel. I still say Lone Ranger. I don't care what the critics say. Pacific Rim. All these movies are still out, and I still recommend them.
Do you think we'll get to the point where it's no longer like the big blockbusters are just in the summer, that they'll actually be spread out through the year a little bit? Would that help?
No, because of schools. I mean, summer is when kids are out of school. And that's
but they're not seeing these movies.
Well, no, they're still seeing them. They're just not seeing these particular ones because whatever the reason is, burnout, exhaustion, whatever it is. Or they're saving their money for Wolverine. That's possible.
I don't know, but maybe this is why you start seeing more movies maybe being pushed into January. They figure the summer is just so chock-a-block with these movies that they don't want to get lost in the noise. So maybe January is when people normally expect shit movies to come out. Well, maybe this is when a couple good ones will, because they don't want to get tossed in with the rest and get eaten up in a Sharknado.
Way to bring it all the way back around.
That's what I'm here for.
And before we move on, Greg S. Responded to our topic and said, I think people are a little exhausted from the other blockbusters earlier in the summer. Also, I currently work at a theater, and virtually zero customers knew that The Lone Ranger was even happening. And White House Down came out a few months ago. That version was called Olympus Has Fallen. I actually agree with him. That was a much better movie. Audiences are saving their money for Wolvie at the end of the month. Yeah, I hope he's right, because I want Wolverine. I want the Wolverine to be very successful. Okay, before we get to emails, let's do Facebook like we always do. For all new Facebook likes, we'll mention you on the show. That's facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. So please like our page.
Not just Hollywood Outsider.
Nope.
The
Hollywood Outsider. Kristen Dew, Kate Easton, Heidi Bullard. Welcome to the whole community. Now let's go to emails. Justin, you're first.
All right, we got an email from Ashley. She says, you guys are magnificent. I love the podcast every week, but this one was like no other. Congrats on the 100th episode. Although I may not email every week, I have not missed a podcast in God knows how long. I appreciate the hard work put in every week to bring your fans the quality of entertainment you do. I have thoroughly enjoyed and have cherished the new friendships I have gotten from the show. Love you guys a long time. We love you too, Ashley.
Scotty?
I got one from John B. He says, and I referenced this earlier in the show, took two sittings, but I finished the 100th episode and it was amazing. Well done, guys. Loved it. Best Ho episode ever. Can't thank you enough for all the quality fun.
You're welcome.
I'll raise a drink to another 100. See you in another life, brothers.
Thank you.
That's all due to, I think, Aaron's editing and Brian's drinking. Because I listened to that whole thing again, and it's like, oh, my God, he is so hammered.
He is. By the end of the show, when you just started drifting out of consciousness.
Yeah.
But he can actually still read. He read some shit.
And I will tell you, that's how you know people actually listen to the whole show, when they start talking about what happened to Brian at the end.
Yep. What was the word he pulled off at the end that we're like, how did he pronounce that?
I don't remember. I can't pronounce it. You're asking the wrong Diablo. And yes, Brian, you're the Twitter ho, so read some Facebook and some tweets, man. Go.
Oh, man. Good Lord. Apparently,
you're always wanting to talk more, bitch.
Apparently, I was very busy on the Twitter and Instagram while recording that
yep.
session.
Hashtag drunk Brian.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we got one from Lawrence Hansen. He says, great show, guys. Really helps my 162-mile daily commute more enjoyable.
I don't know. Maybe he's a local truck driver or something, but God bless you, man. That's...
I'm assuming 81 miles one way. That's good God. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess maybe he lives in a suburb. I don't know. Safe. That's a long way, man. I hope you get paid a lot of money for that.
Yeah, quit staring at your iPhone or whatever it is. Just keep your eyes on the road, Lawrence.
While you're listening to the Hollywood Outsider.
Let's see. Sean McDonald says, congrats, guys. Keep up the great work. Tracy Murray says, congrats on number 100. Well, hashtag 100 hoes. Stephen White says,
Brian still hasn't figured the Twitter out yet, except to say when he's drunk.
Stephen White says, Spider-Man is not gay. A Christmas Story sucks. Die Hard and Scrooged are number one and two to me.
Oh, Die Hard is a great Christmas movie. You're right. Go ahead.
Great show. Number 100.
Hashtag.
Jesus,
hashtag
man.
I'm a hoe.
God, and Stephen White, you can stop listening now.
No, keep listening, man.
Don't listen to him, Stephen.
One of my favorites, Junebug. She says, quote of the day, and I'm only 20 minutes in. Chewy don't take.
that was
no, he don't.
That was Justin. Nice job.
Oh, man. Tammy, she says, one of my favorite entertainment podcasts, and the Hoes funny show. So let's see here. D.A. Cheney, she says, Hollywood Outsider. Oh, wow. The hashtag outtakes on this episode are terrific. Great episode, gentlemen. Smiley face. Hashtag I'm a hoe. Hashtag.
No, he's got
100
it.
Hoes. Hey, look, it's only taken me 8 tweets to get down here. So anyway, truly enjoyed it. Honestly, there hasn't been an episode yet that I've heard that I didn't enjoy. So.
Oh, thanks, guys.
And shout out to D.A. Cheney. She's my new Twitter buddy.
Aw, Scott's got a friend.
I do.
And we will have the winners for the T-shirts next week. So I'm still compiling the list of everybody that sent in. So, and on Spike Lee, one of our writers, we had talked about him. Brian and I had talked about him because of the Old Boy trailer that we weren't big fans. He says, it's from Stephen F. Says, well, Do the Right Thing was the first film I saw of his, and this was back in high school. At the time I saw it, I was really starting to fall in love with film again. I had always loved it, but this was a much more intense feeling. The reason I was falling back in love with the medium is that I was starting to actually view it as an actual art form, and that this particular art had very unique and talented filmmakers and artists. I was starting to watch Woody Allen, Martin Scorsese, Spike Lee, Quentin Tarantino, etc. The reason Spike... I'll forgive you for Woody Allen. The reason Spike's work has resonated with me is because it belongs to the voice of a very passionate and opinionated individual. That's an understatement. His expressions on race relations and his other political interests are fascinating to me. I even love his more straightforward genre work, like Inside Man.
Which was good.
Which I was good. Inside Man was very good. I just think any filmmaker with a true and unique voice should be appreciated and treasured. His films are not always great, but I still would much rather see one of his misses than most of what's out there today in theater. Stephen F.
Hmm.
Very, very well articulated point, so I appreciate that.
Articulated.
Nice. The main reason that I don't like Spike is because of his passion, I guess you would say. I think to me, he divides race more than he brings races together.
You're a racist.
So kind of like how Justin doesn't like Orson Scott Card. That's a problem, but this is okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm.
Justin, you got another one?
Yeah, we got one. An email from Kristen Drew. She says, "Hey guys, I love the 100th episode. It was so fun. I laughed so hard. I was getting funny looks in the office, and I even got a little misty-eyed when y'all were each explaining why you started this podcast. Your sincerity and passion really came through, which is why I am a loyal hoe." Smiley face. I look forward to listening to you all every week, and I also love your After Hours and Spoiler Cast episodes. Please keep up the amazing work, as I love telling everyone about my movie guys and their, to quote Brian, bitchin' show. I'm a hoe forever.
I love hearing those kind of tweets about people listening at work and getting
giggling.
Getting crazy looks.
Yes, I love that.
Thanks, Kristen. That really appreciated. Last one. Sorry, there's so many emails because of our 100th episode. So, hi hoes. My most favorite part of the episodes are the outtakes. You're welcome. But the singing and rapping come a close second. You can thank these guys for that. It's been a while since since I've listened.
Come on. Here.
Pause for Brian to sing, and you have to explain why he does that, by the way. It's actually Justin that does that. Anytime you say it's been a while.
It's been a while.
But lately, I've been listening quite regularly, and I forgot how much I enjoy listening to you all. I think it's because you guys remind me of the Big Bang Theory. Justin is Sheldon. Fair enough. Brian is Leonard. Scott is Kuth Rapali.
What the hell?
And Aaron is
getting late either.
And Aaron is Penny, which I assume is because she's the cute, funny one.
I wish.
Haha, sorry, Aaron. You don't have to apologize. I like Penny. She's hot. Congrats on your 100th episode. Keep it up. And Justin, you have been way quiet as of late. Did you guys turn your mic off?
What?
Thanks, Paula. When the fuck was he quiet?
Yeah.
Thank you, but when the
Thanks,
fuck
Paula.
Was
Paula. I'll try and talk more.
No.
Oh, God. Oh, God. It was reverse psychology.
As for why I do the It's Been a While, I don't know. Song lyrics just have a habit of getting stuck in my brain, and I used to listen to that song by Staind quite a bit when it first came out. And so anytime someone says, "It's been a while," in my head, it immediately snaps into that song, and I have to sing it. There are a couple of songs that do have that effect with me, but It's Been a While seems to get said more often than any of the others do.
Fair enough.
I can't help it. It's knee-jerk.
All right, guys. Well, we're wrapping up the show. Thanks for listening to episode 101, Shark Neho.
That's right. What?
Stay through the credits for outtakes.
Hashtag Shark Neho.
Definitely. There you go. There's your hashtag. If you tweet about the show, snark.
Snark?
I can't even say it. Shark Neho.
You got all Thundercats on us?
Or ho!
Snark.
God damn it. TheHollywoodOutsider.com. That's TheHollywoodOutsider.com. We revamped the website. Check it out. Facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Email us at feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Tell your friends, subscribe on iTunes, listen on your Stitcher radio app, or any plain old RSS feed. Thanks to each of you bitches for showing up. Brian Williams?
Hey, I stayed sober the whole night.
You did. I like you better when you're sober, but there's other people that disagree.
I like drunk Brian.
I like drunk Brian the first 15 minutes. The last 15 minutes, I don't like drunk Brian.
After the trailer park, it's a train wreck.
Justin McCumber, who's A Minor Magic and Haywire are all available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, Kindle, whatever you got, he's got it. Justin?
I love bringing the rock to Rockford College Radio.
Mm-hmm. Thursdays from 4 to 6. And Scott Clark.
Pleasure as always, man.
Hey, do you have a book or anything?
I don't.
Oh, he should probably work on that. He's hoping to be a teacher sometime soon.
Please hire me.
Please. If anybody's out there looking for a teacher, Scott Clark's
available.
Please
give your children to me.
Mm-hmm. And remember, guys, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
As always, Justin's got my back.
Yeah, he does.
Just what? I'm trying to save you a little bit of stuff later. Tom Hanks returns as a symbologist, not a symbolist.
What? Did I put symbolist?
Yeah, I don't know if you thought he was like in the orchestra.
This is the Hollywood Outsider, weekly entertainment podcast for this. Nah, I fucked that up already.
How did you fuck that up?
That's not what I wanted to say.
All right, Brian.
No, it's the old format.
No. Crack your knuckles. Get ready. Dig in deep.
On. All right, here we go.
Gave him the one.
There you go. There's your foul ball. Cock puncher.
Yeah, it's a...
Is that like a... Is that bad? Why is it bad?
Do you want to get like punched in the cock?
It's not my cock getting punched. I'm punching somebody else's. And unless punch is some other slang that means taking one in the jaw, then I'm much
rather. This situation requires is a whole lot more of you shutting your motherfucking ass up.
This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast. For this week, we are looking at upcoming releases, The Wolverine and The To-Do List.
Hey, that doesn't suck. Oh, yeah! Oh.
This is the Hollywood Outsider, our movie... God, fuck. This is the Hollywood...
Shut up, you donkey-raping shit-eater!
This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast. For this week, we're going to look at upcoming releases, The Wolverine and The To-Do...
Is it the in front of Wolverine that's fucking yet, man? Because that seems to be about where you're fucking up.
Taking the off.
And we're going to see the Wolverine.
Today, Junior.
Are you going to kill me again?
Hey, how about those Asian pilots, huh?
What?
Holy shit. We too something, low?
Something wrong?
What are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about.
That Asiana Airlines that crashed last week?
Yeah?
And I mean, straight out of Anchorman. Somebody, quote unquote, confirmed the name of the pilots. And they put them on the screen and then read them. And actually said, I mean, look it up. It's on YouTube. And the ladies actually reads them off. Something Wong. Holy Fook.
We Too Low.
We Too Low. And Bang Ding Ow.
Bang Ding Ow.